Hey guys, and welcome to the More Than a Car podcast brought to you by Volkswagen. I'm Kurt McGuinness.
And I potentially could be Heather Maltman.
So we're back, we're talking all things cars, and this time, Heather, I thought we'd have a bit of a chat about automation.
And when you say automation, you clearly don't mean manual versus automatic, right?
No.
You're talking like the robots are coming.
The rise of the robots. That's exactly what we're going to be talking about.
Mate, it is a solid no from me. I am absolutely terrified of the robots.
Well, I'm going to try and change your mind, and to help me on my quest to right the wrongs of Ms. Maltman, we have a really, really great interview with a sociologist and futurist, Shara Evans.
Is she like a tarot reader?
No. Well, Shara is one of those people who looks at technology trends and data and then predicts which way they're going to go. So
wow.
I did actually ask her all about this in my interview, which we'll touch on a little bit later on. But let's get down to it. Automation.
All right, teach me your ways.
Even the idea of cruise control in itself is a form of automation.
Great, so now my car is already telling me what to do.
Car can, in effect, operate in solo mode without needing to talk to the stop signs or traffic lights.
Thank you to my Star Trek pajamas.
Talk about a god complex.
Yeah. So we actually identify with five full stages of automation. Zero being no automation, five being full automation, and then we're moving in between.
Sorry, what are we at right now?
Theoretically, we're sort of at somewhere between two and three. So partial automation is something that is already happening. In fact, there are a number of cars within the Volkswagen Group, most of them now actually, that are carrying levels of automation. I'm just going to let that sink in.
Yeah, I just needed to take a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, so level one, if that's driver assistance, is that just what I was talking about before, where it's like automatic versus manual?
Well, yes and no. So, I mean, what we're talking about here is a level of interaction between driver and car. And when we're talking automation, it defines the level of how much impact the car actually has over its own actions. So back in the old days, if you were talking to, and I apologize to everybody out there with a Beetle at the moment, and I'm classifying it as the old days, but back when you were driving a manual Beetle, everything was on you. The car was running, but you drove, you steered, you indicated, you braked. Everything was
It was up to you to make sure that the car moved in the general direction that you were aiming towards.
Absolutely. So that's where we were.
Uh-huh.
Then we started to move into things like, we've got adaptive cruise control, which has been around for a little while now.
Cruise control?
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, have you tried adaptive cruise control?
What's the difference?
The car will actually maintain its own speed, maintain a safe distance between other cars. And now in some models, including Volkswagen cars, you can actually have what we call traffic jam assist. So you could be driving along at cruise control. Traffic in front of you will slow down and come to a stop. The vehicle that you're in using the adaptive cruise control will bring the car to a stop as well.
Shut up.
And then when the car takes off in front of you, your car goes off as well.
No,
still
it
maintaining
doesn't.
The same speed. Absolutely.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a technology that isn't entirely new, but obviously it's been perfected and worked upon over the years in different generations of cars.
Mm.
Even the idea of cruise control in itself is a form of automation. So when we've moved into...
I hadn't thought about that. Great.
Yeah.
So now my car is already telling me what to do. Where are we on the table now? So you're saying we're between two and three.
Theoretically, yeah, we are.
Okay. So one is just driver assistance. Two is partial automation, which is where you're saying that the car is kind of starting to take over from you, which is the lane assisty thing
Correct.
Between
yep.
the and the stopping because of the traffic.
Yep. The thing with the guy in the place. That's right. Yep.
And then level three is conditional automation.
Correct.
What is that?
So conditional automation is basically the car will recognize certain parameters and interact with them. So in the event of...
Well, like it'll talk to the other car.
Well, no, that's where we get to sort of full automation and how cars are sort of communicating with each other.
No.
But the idea of sort of conditional automation and high automation is the levels in terms of how much the car interacts and how much it makes decisions for itself. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, for example, one of the cars that we brought out a number of years ago, which to my great dismay, we no longer carry, it was called an Up. So an Up was a little, small, city-sized hatchback, and it premiered a technology which we call city emergency braking. It's for those times where something jumps out in front of you. And the technology has developed in such a way now that we have two stages. So we have city emergency braking is for low speed stuff. So up to about 30 kilometers an hour. Mm. So driving in high density sort of traffic, something jumps out or an obstacle's in front of you, the car will stop itself. There are a number of different levels within that where if it's not an immediate threat, the car will sort of give you a warning and stop. But within the city emergency braking confines, the car has the power to stop itself completely. Anything over that threshold of 30 kilometers or so, it is called what we call front assist. And front assist can monitor the, I guess, the risk of an impact and make a decision in terms of how it responds. So it can go from anything from coming up with an alert on the dashboard to say, hey, there's something in front of you, to tapping the brakes to full stopping. And in some of the cars that we carry now within the Volkswagen range, which, you know, cars that are sold in Australia, we're talking about speeds up to 210 kilometres an hour, which is far in excess
wow.
of any highway speed anywhere, except for maybe the Northern Territory, that this would be required. But that is an amazing technology that, and I mean, we're only sort of talking, you know, within a decade, this technology has not only been introduced, but then evolved as well.
But is it like a sudden stop? Like the car just sees something and you're done? Or is it like a gradual braking? Or does it actually judge the distance between?
Yeah, there are stages. So it will, the car is basically using a number of systems. Some manufacturers use radar, some manufacturers use laser. But ultimately, the technology is there for the same reason, to keep an eye out and to judge the risk of an impact. And then the car makes that decision, whether I stop, whether I slow down, whether I give the driver a chance to intervene themselves.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's there for an accident.
Okay, so then is that moving into high automation after that?
Yeah, correct. So the levels of high automation really does sort of come down to how much impact. Well, how many we need to almost think about it in terms of decision making, how much decision the car can make for the driver, and how much of an impact the driver still has. So at high automation, the car is doing most of the thinking, but there is still room for the driver and the occupants, I guess, to sort of have some impact on that. And then full automation is, while cars will still, in some cases, have a steering wheel and an accelerator and everything, because there still may be a need for the driver to remain control on the car can actually do all this themselves.
Well, I was going to say, because once you go into full automation, you're not going to have a steering wheel anymore. What are you going to do if the car suddenly, like, doesn't know where it is, or, like, does the wrong thing? Like, how are you going to steer it back on course? But I guess by that stage, I'm sure kids will just be born with the knowledge that cars drive themselves and they'll never know what we went through.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we've got cars now. I mean, your car, your phone even can tell you where to go within, you know, a few metres of a destination. It will, I mean, the satellite navigation systems in cars.
Well, the little pop-up thing, right,
yeah,
that comes up going, you are this far from this location.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I don't want to get another McDonald's burger, okay?
Yeah, well,
I get it. I know I go there a lot.
But
sorry,
this is exactly the I guess the point is that, you know, we've got this technology already that's sort of sitting within our cars and within our phones, and of course now phones and cars are becoming more and more integrated with each other. So pretty much from our very smallest car, the Polo, right up to our Arteons and our next generation Touareg, which will land in 2019.
When are we going to get these full automated special car things? When do we get them? I don't want the robots. So.
We're not far off. I mean, this is the amazing thing about the technology. I mean, we are talking about brands like Tesla that are already doing fully autonomous cars.
Have you been in a Tesla?
I have been in a Tesla. I haven't been in an autonomous car I haven't been in an autonomous Tesla.
I have.
And?
It's terrifying. It is terrifying. I kept trying to yell commands at it, and the driver was like, that's not a thing.
Well, that's
I kept going, Tesla, turn the music up. Nothing would happen.
I'm sorry, I can't help you there.
Yeah, but it didn't even say that. It was just rubbish.
That's
I was
rude.
Like, what is this?
That's just rude.
What is this? This is just another car. Yeah. I could have done this in my Nissan.
Look me in the eye when you disobey me. That's all I ask of cars. Insolent. But this is...
You were saying?
Well, look, I mean, you know, the thing is that there are a lot of those cars now that are, like Tesla, for one, is actually embarking on automated testing and things like that. The technology is certainly there because we've got enough in the cars that are already sort of able to sense other sort of cars on the road. You've got things like navigation that tacks into the car's onboard computer, so the car knows where it is and where the roads are and where to turn and all those sort of things. So we
that is
are
terrifying.
We are already sort of there. It's just a question more so of when it becomes widely acceptable and whether it starts getting integrated into our cities. Because the thing is that in order for automation to happen fully, there has to be a whole ecosystem of cars and app developers and, you know, everything from town planners needs to start thinking about how automated cars come in. Right now, we have technology in cars that is semi-autonomous, or I guess in a way autonomous in itself in terms of one function.
And but, that's, well, is that like partial automation?
Yeah, that's
like
partial.
Number two?
Yeah, right, okay. So that's partial. But it's already happening. I mean, I've been in cars and driven in trials when even just adaptive cruise control sort of came up, and that was a new thing. And one of the fantastic things about being able to sort of sample some of these new technologies in my former life as a motoring journo is being able to sort of be at that cold face of you know, when these technologies come out. And there's been some really, really famous examples of the technology being unveiled and getting it wrong. So there was quite a famous, and I urge anybody out there to sort of look at autonomous braking fails and things like that, because there have been, and I'm not going to name names, but there have been some very famous car companies that have actually unveiled new forms of autonomy. Parking, so self-parking is another one. And
oh, yeah, there's nothing funnier than when my dad's like, check this out. My Nissan can park itself, and then it's like 2 meters out from the gutter, and it's like, mate, if you'd done that with the RTA, that would have been a solid fail. That is a solid fail.
Actually, that's a really good question. I mean, you know, the with so many cars now being able to park themselves, is it still something that people will that actually become, I guess, obsolete in the new license testing program? I mean, if there are so many things there for cars that are already sort of, you know, taking over from driver interaction, are we no longer going to start testing for it?
You have been watching too many episodes of Clueless.
Yeah, I have.
Very everywhere has valet thing to say. That is, I'm impressed, okay?
Yeah.
You're re-invited to my birthday.
So I guess one of the biggest questions that people sort of ask is, how long am I going to be able to drive my car for? And as you know, my official answer is I hope for a really, really long time. But I think probably what will happen more so is that we will have cars that will be offered as autonomous vehicles, and then we will have cars that have autonomous capabilities and can be driven. Because there will always be sort of times where a vehicle will need to be somebody will need to intervene with the vehicle. But one of the really interesting things about where we're going with autonomy is this amazing sort of idea around the psychology of cars and how we sort of, I guess, come to accept levels of autonomy. So there was a, I'm just going to pull up an interesting little bit of research here, which was actually some Volkswagen research. But so some research that was conducted by Volkswagen has shown that trust between human and vehicle blossoms rapidly and in many cases completely. But having said that, a decade ago, the company has run a series of internal studies in which they put people in the driver's seat of a car and they were informed that the car was fully autonomous. Now, here's the kicker. Behind them, behind a curtain, was actually a driver who controlled the car using a camera feed on the road ahead as if they were playing a video game. So the guy's name who actually did this experiment was Mr. Lathrop.
Good name.
Very good name. I mean, we're really sort of ticking off some great sort of,
Lathrop.
Official.
I trust him to drive from the back seat.
Yeah.
Lathrop.
Yeah. It sounds a bit like a sort of like a second tier spy in a James Bond universe, doesn't it? Oh, better get Lathrop onto that.
This is a job for Lathrop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so he actually said that we found that people get comfortable very quickly, almost too quickly, in fact, in letting the car drive itself. So in terms of, you know, human physiology or psychology, we are sort of pretty willing to accept or put our faith in machines to make decisions for us. I mean, we do it all the time. For example, using your sat-nav. How do you know that the sat-nav is going to take you to where you go? You just trust it because it does.
It gives you a little blue line.
Yeah. And let me ask you this. Have you ever sat in traffic while your sat-nav's on?
Yeah.
And you've thought, nope, the sat-nav knows where I'm going and it's picked the best route for me.
Oh, I always question my sat-nav.
Really?
Yeah. But I'm a very skeptical human being. Like, sometimes I worry that I actually have some form of paranoia.
So that's where that tinfoil hat's coming from.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't trust the robots, Mitch. But, like, seriously, I remember the first time sat-nav came out, I was poor as hell. So I was like, well, I'm going to be sticking with a map for a few years. And the first time I used one, everyone was really used to it.
Mm.
They'd been doing it for ages. And I was so used to pulling out a map and having to work out where I was going that the idea of trusting one of those, especially in Sydney City, I was like, there is no way that this is going to work. And do you remember all the glitches it had? It would take you to the end of the street and it would tell you to turn right and you'd find out you couldn't turn right because it was a one-way street.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I've taken you through a school. Please turn around.
You are driving in the middle of a park. Please turn at the next appropriate intersection.
You are in the Pacific Ocean. Would you like to turn around?
That has happened to me, but that's a story for another day, children.
Sat-navs don't ask, would you like? They say, turn around, please. The idea of driving our own cars is probably one of those ones that comes down to two things. One, there probably needs to be a greater level of testing and I guess, you know, more cars on the road that have this technology because in my humble personal opinion, I still think that cars need to sort of talk to each other in order for true cohesion, because if you're on the road, you need to sort of be aware of everything else that's going on around you. But if the network could work, you could have cars that would actually say, okay, I'm going to indicate left and veer now. And if the cars are talking, then you have that sort of moment where the car behind it says, oh, that car's going to turn left and needs to, I'm going to pull back. So that is sort of happening. But as I mentioned, we did actually get a chance to talk to futurist Shara Evans. And that was one of the things I asked her. I asked her whether she thought, you know, what kind of infrastructure barriers that we'll have. So especially in regard to the internet speeds that you need to have cars when they're communicating. So have a listen to this. Okay, guys, joining us now is Shara Evans. She's a technology futurist. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on your program.
Do you think that the ability for cars to be able to talk to each other is one of the real sort of, I guess, a stumbling block with autonomy?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because as I was thinking about how things are going to unfold, you know, I've mapped out the kind of communications that are necessary. And one of the things is onboard sensors so that the cars can, in effect, operate in solo mode without needing to talk to the stop signs or traffic lights or any other vehicle. But where it gets really powerful is when you have these vehicle-to-vehicle networks that the cars can talk to each other as well as the traffic and transport infrastructure. Then you're going to see things that are very highly harmonized and highly autonomous. Because you've got that extra layer of communication happening there. But it's got to be real time, no latency, really super fast.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that what Shara is sort of talking about is that I think cities will start to realise certain zones.
Okay, but then how can you ask a family, let's say parents,
mm-hmm.
to trust that this car is going to get their children safely from point A to point B if they are not the ones in control of that car? And then how can you ask them to then also feel comfortable with the fact that maybe their car doesn't malfunction, but what if the other person's does?
It's a fair question. And I think that probably that's one of the reasons why there is so much testing and so much attention being placed on this, because you're right. It is a certain level of responsibility that we as humans and as drivers have currently that we are almost relinquishing to a machine. We have to trust that the machine will make the decision for us. But, you know, one of the, excuse me, one of the interesting things that I was actually reading about was, so there was some research conducted by the University of Michigan, which was, they were doing some tests for self-driving cars. And they have said that these cars would have to demonstrate with about 80% confidence that the systems are 90% safer than human drivers. So what that would require is about 300,000 to 100 million miles of real-world driving tests. So that's a lot. That's a lot of testing, and it's almost impossible to do that over the course of a lifetime.
How much would that – yeah, because I was going to ask, how much is that in, say, comparison to how much we would drive in our lifetimes?
A lot. It'd be a lot more. I mean, you know, it's hard to say what an average drive would be, because typically Australians, for example, we drive a lot greater distances simply because we're a massive continent. And typically one of the it's one of the things that I love the most about Australia is that we are still very keen on driving for our holidays. We do the long sort of drives up the
coast.
Oh,
road trips are the best. Because we've got the best coastline ever.
And that's why you'll find certain things in our cars that, you know, may not necessarily be standard in, you know, vehicles overseas. So driver fatigue detection is one of the technologies that we carry in our Volkswagens. And that is not a standard feature in all Volkswagens around the world, but it is one that we offer in Australia as a standard feature because Australians typically drive longer distances and driver fatigue is such a big deal in Australia. So that testing needs to sort of and obviously happen. And anybody that's done a science, done science in high school would know that the idea for an experiment is rigor. So you have to be able to repeat the process, but you also have to be able to have enough of those results to say within a shadow of a doubt, you know, bringing out all the anomalies and all of that sort of stuff, this is the actual definitive answer. Yeah.
But yeah, what are we going to do though if we're in a car that can think for itself and has its own free will and decides, actually, look, I'm actually not going to take the impact for you anymore. I'm kind of done. And they sort of create their own revolution. Oh, wow. I definitely need some tinfoil issue.
Well, let me ask you this one. Are you ready for a nosebleed? So one of the big ethical debates that are happening with, driverless cars. So, ultimately, that's what we're talking about. We really shouldn't be saying autonomous cars because the cars are autonomous now. These are driverless cars, cars that will drive by themselves. But one of the ethical debates that are coming out now in terms of, the right and wrong of this technology is, what does a car do in terms of making that decision who to sacrifice? So, you know, let's just say that in the event of an accident and you have a pedestrian and you have,
No!
So how does
no!
the car...
No, family of four and say a pedestrian. Yep. Who does the car pick?
Exactly.
Oh.
So do you look at it by there are four people and I, sacrifice one for, needs of the... many outweigh the needs of the few. This is so this is one of the things that are obviously
because someone's going to have to write that algorithm.
Correct.
Like someone is going to have to predetermine.
Correct.
That choice.
Yeah. So it's not as
talk about a god complex.
Yeah. This is it. Because cars are such a huge part of our lives, and let's be fair, they're also capable of great speeds, great force as well. If pointed in the wrong direction, in more ways than one, there are sort of some very, very real impacts that can happen.
But I guarantee you that that car is not choosing between a bird and a family.
No, absolutely
not. That car's going to hit that bird.
But see, the car wouldn't actually recognize it per se as a bird. It would recognize it as an obstacle and, you know, a moving object or something like that. So it really comes down to those sort of items of, I guess, the data. And part of that data is about the testing. So running those, you know, hundreds of thousands of kilometers over time. And,
wow.
You know, there are certainly these sort of trials that are going on now. But one of the things that I guess is that cities need to adapt as well to autonomous cars. I mean, if you look at, say, a city like Sydney, Sydney happened by accident. We landed in sort of Botany Bay and settled there, and then we settled sort of closer in towards the CBD. And then, you know, the city just kind of expanded, but it didn't expand in a planned way. Whereas if you look at a city like Canberra, which was planned from
the get-go. That's what happens when you send convicts to a new island. They're they go nuts.
Hey, you know.
I'm going to get drunk.
Yeah. But this is when this is where it really sort of gets interesting is, you know, how do you make that decision? How do you, you know, build that code that sort of says, you know, hey, let's do it that way. But the cities of the world need to adapt to that sort of, mode of transport as well.
Would that mean that roads would change, highways, all that kind of, like, would we?
Yeah. Definitely. And not just highways, but things like car parks as well. So
How? Because you'd still have families that would own their own cars.
Yeah,
you'd
totally.
Still have a demand to put, unless the automobiles, what if they pack themselves away into a little briefcase and you just carry it in?
Oh, like the Jetsons. Oh, that would be so good.
Oh.
I
like I'm in Barbie pajamas again.
That it's would just, take getting out of meetings to a whole new level.
And they actually made the sound.
Yeah.
How good would that be? I will give myself mad props for that sound effect, by the way.
So basically what we're saying is Jetsons, yes.
Yes.
Blade Runner and The Matrix,
no.
Okay. Yep. Just so we
podcast
know.
Done.
Yeah. Thanks very much. We'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Try the veal. Yeah.
You were saying about car parks?
Well, okay. So we actually... No surprise, we have cars that park themselves now. It's in Volkswagen, it's called Park Assist. We're going through sort of different generations of parking.
Sure.
We also have Trailer Assist. So we have cars that can park themselves with a trailer on the back.
I can tell you right now as a woman, I'm very happy about that.
It's a great thing.
Because there is nothing more embarrassing than when you're trying to park a car that's got a caravan or a trailer on the back in front of a bunch of dudes at a campsite and they're all like, oh, watch this, she's going to stuff it up. And you're like, I'll be fine. I've got this. By the way, this is a hypothetical. Hmm. This didn't actually happen
to
me.
No, of course.
And they're all like, oh, she's going to stuff it. Watch, oh, she's so close to that tree, she doesn't even realize. And then just as you start, like, you know, backing it in, thinking you're nailing it, it actually does scrape the side of a tree and completely rip off one of the side windows to the caravan. And then you find out that it's your boyfriend's caravan of his parents, and then you have to pay for the window so that they don't know about it.
Hypothetically. Yeah,
that
of course.
Didn't happen to me.
Yeah, it's a very, very cool bit of technology. But we've also got cars that can park themselves, but we're also now starting to work on, as a company, cars that can actually drop you off at the top floor of a parking garage. You get out and the car will go down, drive down by itself, park and stop. And then when you need it again, you get out of the elevator, you wait up at the ground floor and the car will get out of the parking lot, drive all the way up to the top and pull up out the front.
It is time for another episode of Out Geek Kurt. Now, last time I walked away with 4 points, you walked away with absolutely nothing.
You did, but to be fair, some of those cars hadn't even seen the light of day. So,
well,
but,
that was the
but
whole
yes,
point.
Yes,
they were prototypes.
You yep, you did.
So, yeah,
okay,
I know what
so
a prototype is now.
This is redemption.
Okay, so I'm going to give you 5 different automated cars that were famous in films for being driverless.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they're famous driverless cars. Pause for effect.
Yeah.
Now you've got 5 clues.
Okay.
And in those 5 clues, you've got to guess exactly what the car is.
Yep.
Before the end.
Okay.
Otherwise, you lose.
Oof.
I'm going to go with number 2 first, actually, because mm-hmm. I feel like this one's quite easy. So we'll start off easier. Right?
Okay.
It's a 4-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
Brightly coloured, yellow and green.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a big bull bar and lots of spotlights. Okay.
So,
usually used for driving around in large terrain.
Oh, Jurassic Park.
Damn, he's good. Damn it. Damn it.
Yes! I'm feeling a comeback.
All right, so now I'm going to move to... All right, I'm going to give you number five, because I think number five could be quite hard. And if you don't get it, I'll never stop laughing at you.
Mm-hmm.
Because this one is a Volkswagen Beetle.
Mm-hmm. Herbie.
Damn it.
Herbie is the only and the original driverless car.
Okay, this one's hard. This one's very hard.
Okay.
It's an Audi.
Mm-hmm.
It's really wide.
Mm-hmm.
Sleek and silver, smooth curves. It's got...
iRobot?
Who are you?
Yes. This is the comeback, folks.
I'm actually getting really nervous now. Okay, you got two more.
Okay.
All right. It's a kick-ass automated car.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Chevrolet Camaro.
Mm-hmm.
It's bright yellow with black stripes on the bonnet.
Oh, Bumblebee. Transformers.
I quit. Yep. I quit. This is ridiculous.
For real.
All right. I really hope you don't get this last one.
Okay.
Okay. It's a Lexus.
Yep.
It's bright red.
Yep.
It's really futuristic with crazy curves.
Yep.
It almost looks like it's built backwards.
Yep.
So it looks like you should be driving it out of the back of it.
Yep.
And then the front is rounded, back is raked out, and the back wheels are open.
Minority Report.
Oh, I quit.
Yeah.
I quit. That means I'm now only on 4 points and you're on 5 points.
Guys, so this is just one of the great comeback stories. This is the Stephen Bradbury of just... excellence, I think. I've just waltzed this one through. Having said that, I didn't have a girlfriend until I was 25. So, you know, that would actually explain a lot. So thank you to my Star Trek pajamas, and thank you to television, and sucked in. So... that's automation. That's driverless cars. I mean, I think we could go on all day with this, actually. I really do. So, guys, if you'd like to know more, or if you would like us to discuss something on the next podcast, make sure you drop us a line, morethanacar@volkswagen.com.au, and we would love to hear from you.